Hail and hello, everyone. Welcome to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, a Midgard Musings production. Join me, Jesse, your host, as we discuss random heathen-related topics and various other things in an attempt to find where, if any, heathen worldviews can be applied. You can support this podcast by clicking on the Linktree link in the description or show notes. You can also follow me on all of my social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and become a patron on Patreon. Join me every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Central on all major podcast streaming platforms, including Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and many, many. If you wish to have your voice heard on the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, you can dial in to 615-671-9832. Thank you all once again for listening to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast. Enjoy, and hail to you all.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
All right, everybody. Hail and welcome back indeed. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, brought to you by me. This is a brought to you by me and our good friends at Anchor. Anchor.fm. If you're looking to spread your own voice on the podcast waves, consider checking it out. It's working well enough for me. Thanks for that. So how's everybody doing today? Hope you're all doing well. Hope you all had a great this past weekend and, you know, most of what's happened this week. So hope it's all been good for you. Wanted to call attention to a couple of things, you know, as far as like the housekeeping stuff. If you guys are watching this on Facebook, you'll notice that you can now give stars. And so far as I understand, stars on the Facebook platform is a way for you to support your content creators monetarily by giving them stars. So one star is an equivalent of one U.S. penny or 1 cent. So you can quite literally offer your 2 cents every week if you wanted to or so choose. I think there might be a minimum of like 50 stars, but hey, you know, not only can you offer your 2 cents, you can offer your 50 cents. I need all the cents that I can get. I need to be able to make all the cents that I can possibly make. So consider that if this is where you're catching the podcast. And also, if you notice down here on the YouTube banner down below, there is now direct links to the Midgard Musings merchandise store or Spring store. There are some featured items down here, but I offer much more than what you might see on that initial roll bar of products. So check it out. Of course, when you do buy merchandise from the store, I do see a percentage of that commission earned. So it definitely helps monetarily as well. And it also gives you some gear to sport. You know, you can go to your pagan events and go to your band practices or go out to eat and, you know, have the Midgard Musings bind rune and some other neat symbols and things. When people ask about it, man, that shirt or that hoodie or those leggings or those socks or whatever it is that you get look really cool. Where can I get one? You can say, hey, check out the Midgard Musings channel on YouTube or go to, you know, the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast on YouTube, whatever. Check it out. Get you some stuff for yourself. So anyway, and in all of the other ways that are there in the Linktree link that's posted in every episode and all of the video descriptions and podcast show notes. Be sure to check all that fun stuff out. Today we have a guest who is a musician. He has a YouTube channel as well and is a Norse heathen or Norse pagan. So we are going to be welcoming in Blake Russell, who is better known by his online moniker as Skaldic Works. You can find him for sure here on YouTube. I believe he also has an Instagram page. There's a Linktree link, I think, to all of his social sites and whatnot. But he plays the bow harp, or the tjalla harp, I think it's called. I think I've heard it pronounced differently in different languages or different dialects. But the tjalla harp, you know, it's that kind of droning sounding fiddle that a lot of individuals and musicians that play the Nordic folk style of music play. So he has, again, videos up here on his YouTube channel, which is going to be linked. So be sure to check him out, subscribe to his channel, follow along what he does. And we're going to bring him on here today to talk about, I'm sure, that, and just kind of whatever else tickles our pickles and strikes our interest or sets our minds on fire or puts our ships in harbor or whatever the other phrases that you can think of that mean some of the things that I just alluded to. So for the first time on the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, please welcome Skaldic Works. All right, folks. And as I mentioned earlier, we are joined now for the very first time on the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast with this is Blake, better known by his online moniker as Skaldic Works. So thank you for tuning in, and thank you for being a guest on the show today, Blake.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. So I mentioned earlier that you are a musician. You've got your YouTube channel. And you play, and I think it's pronounced tjalla harp, toggle harp. Okay. I was adding toggle. I was adding enunciations that didn't belong, I guess. Evidently.
Yeah. Well, it's also known as a tjalla harp or tjalla harpa or toggle harp. Toggle harpa is what it's really called. It's also called the stray harper harpa.
And how long have you been playing this for?
Since probably 2021, so about a year. A little over a year.
What's your musical background? Like, what kind of brought you into the pursuit of that particular instrument?
Okay, I have many musical backgrounds. I've been exposed to music since I was born. Mm-hmm. And I've been exposed to mostly the old country, like 90s on back to like bluegrass scene.
Okay.
Which I can play those instruments as well. Thanks to my grandfather. But I did start to lean towards more like heavy metal back towards maybe in my 20s, early 20s.
Me too.
And stuff. As when I got into heavy metal and stuff, and pretty much throughout the around 2006, I got into heavy metal or hard rock, and then heavy metal, and just started leaning towards that. And I've been on and off again with the guitar and stuff, and but it's basically just a ADHD thing going on. But we we had a band like right before COVID happened, around late 2019.
Yeah.
And that I was a part of, and I played rhythm on that one. And then we had our first show, our first and only show at that time. And they wanted me to switch over later on after COVID hit. And we had to cancel one of our shows at the, it was a place in Huntsville.
Okay, we're going to play it. When you say switch over, you mean like switch instruments or?
Yes. After that, they wanted me to switch to bass. Mm. And my friend who played bass was switching over to guitar.
Gotcha.
But as slowly as it slowly progressed. I just felt like this is not the direction I wanted to go. And yeah. I started listening to, like, of course, bands like Lord Runa, Heilung, Donheim, and some other, and I can't remember who else, Skuld as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's how I got into the Toggle Harpa is the instrument, because I was going to try to get me like a lyre and try to get that down, but it's like, ooh, a bowed version of this.
Yes.
And the thing is, I have actually violin background.
Oh, wow, so okay.
That came easy to me to learn this instrument. I actually played both, not only but I had violin lessons when I was young, I also play fiddle style.
So the bluegrass influences and stuff that from growing up, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. From there also I used to be a competing harmonica player.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Dude. That, very versatile.
I took about fifth place in the majority of the ones I've competed in.
Very cool. I used to have a number of harmonicas, and I never got like really good at them, but I felt like it was a relatively easy instrument to learn how to play, knowing where to blow on the reeds and whatnot. I mean, I can't read a lick of sheet music at all, but listening to a song, I could like find the tone and whatever on the harmonicas and play it with relative ease. So as a child, you know, I was like, oh, this is a fun instrument. And my dad, you know, he was a drummer. And so I've always kind of picked up on the percussions, you know, type instruments. Yeah. So, you know, like the drum and stuff is kind of like I naturally gravitate toward that. I'm always, you know, tapping on things and tapping my feet or bobbing my head or whatever. So that like desire to just keep rhythm is always there. And then I was gifted a lyre over Yule this past year. And, I think I've learned like maybe one song on it, not even a full one. And I haven't gotten the whole thing fully tuned because there's like different tunings that you got to play for different songs, which I never realized. I'm like, oh, well, there's more to this than I guess.
Same with Toggle Harpa, because you have different keys.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it has a certain range depending on the build of the instrument, because sometimes that hole like on mine is real short.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you get to the longer one, some that have longer ones, and then you get to the bass range, that's actually more of a modern take on that instrument, or the bass and cello range, Toggle Harpa.
Yeah, are they? I mean, so they have different sizes, but as far as like the number of strings on them, I've seen ones that have what looks like just like maybe three or four strings, like nothing very complicated, and then I've seen others with more. But
yeah, traditionally there are four, but a lot of them have been using three strings lately because of Einar Selvik, if I'm pronouncing his name right. I can't.
Yeah, from Wardruna. Yeah,
yeah. He uses a three string, which he calls it a Toggle Harpa. The earlier one, his model, the shape of it is more akin to the Yohiko, or I think. Yeah, Yohiko. I keep pronouncing it wrong because I got called out one time trying to teach a lesson on that. But they say it's actually smaller than what he was playing. But the thing is, the luthier that created my instrument, his versions are about a little bit bigger than the traditional Finnish model.
Okay.
But he started. So that's, I guess that's how the three string came about. Mostly, but traditionally it's four strings.
Interesting.
But the tuning is about the same as the three string, except for the one closest to your hand is tuned exactly the same as the middle.
And I'm assuming, well, I'm gonna say assuming, but I guess from like watching like folks like yourself and other players of the instrument, they're not fretted, right? Like it's almost like a violin in that sense where you bend the strings or I don't know what the technical term is, the correct term, but you know, it's not like a, where's your A, C, G, you know.
Yeah, it's not fretted, right? Actually microtonal. It's microtonal.
Okay. Okay.
But, interesting. It does it also. It does not have a fingerboard either. So.
Right. Yeah. It's
you have nothing pressed down on. Yeah.
So from bluegrass to rock and heavy metal, which I think the transition from bluegrass into metal is almost seamless, because it's kind of like black metal is bluegrass with like electric guitars and distorted tones and things, you know, like you can almost see like how the ferocity and the seemingly chaotic nature of bluegrass has mirrors into such extreme versions of metal as say like black metal. Do you see the similarities there too as a practicing musician, or am I just like talking out of my butt here?
Yeah, I see some similarities to it. There's some different techniques, of course.
All right.
When do you see a bluegrass musician play arpeggios? Hmm. Well, technically, if you look at melodic banjo, I'll go back on that. Melodic banjo has more, and mandolin styles and violins will probably do more arpeggio stuff than, say, like a guitar would play in bluegrass. Or dobro, or
yeah. I've always loved the incorporation of banjo anyway. I mean, I like the sound of a banjo. I think it's very, I don't know. I mean, it's just like one of those sounds that you can't mimic with anything else. It's so unique, and it has its own sound, and you know, it's a telltale sound, kind of much like the toggle harp or the teleharp. It has a very distinct sound to it. You can't mistake it for anything else. And I think
it changes also across the different styles too, because you have your traditional banjo that dates back to the African times. Then you have minstrel banjo. Then you have your frailing or clawhammer banjo sound, which is the open backs. And then you have your shrug style, which is your three finger style playing. Then you go into melodic banjo, which is the same thing in the three finger style format, but just a little more complicated. And then you have four string Irish banjo.
Yeah. See, now I think, you know, and I never see, I'm learning stuff here today too, because I never realized that, as you said, that there's history with a style of banjo that is like from the African continent. But I learned so much about music and instruments, right? Like, there's they don't sound exactly the same, but they have a very similar sound. I don't know what the correct term is, but in like Mongolian folk music, there's like this huge bowed thing, and it's got two or three strings. Like, there it is. Yeah, that one. Have you ever are you familiar with that instrument? And
I actually like the band The Who.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Come on now. Yeah.
I can go down them.
Yeah. Tanger Cavalry, I don't know if you ever heard of them. They kind of were like The Who's, I don't say necessarily predecessor, but I almost feel like Tanger Cavalry were the pioneers of what we have now in terms of Mongolian folk metal, because The Who started really making a stamp on the music scene. I mean, I didn't find out about The Who until I'd already heard of Tanger Cavalry.
I think I've heard them play. I have to relook them up and stuff.
Yeah, man, I'll connect with you and send you some stuff, because the reason I found out about them is I was at the time doing a lot of press for and like album reviews publication for different bands, and it just so happened that one of the labels or promotion companies that I was doing work through sent me information on Tanger Cavalry, saying that they were coming through the area on a tour and wanted me to come by and interview them and do an album review and all this other, or do a review and an interview. And what was also interesting was at the time, the PR companies who contacted me, the promoters who booked the show were people who I knew at the time in Nashville. So it worked out really well. I was like, hey, Kayla, Malcolm, you know, like I was contacted by, I can't remember the name of the PR company, but like the PR company, was it Adrenaline maybe? But they had like ties to like some pretty major bands, you know, like Lamb of God, Megadeth, and some of these like pretty big names. I'm like, hey, I was, I was contacted by this PR company, wanted me to come by, and they're like, yeah, absolutely. Just, you know, give us your name and a plus one. We'll have you on the guest list. So that's how I got turned on to Tenger Calvary, became friends with their vocalist. And then tragically, about a year or two after I met them or whatever, the vocalist tragically passed, took his own life, which was really sad. And but again, you know, got into their music and was like, man, this is groundbreaking, you know, like,
yeah,
folk music that is turned into like extreme varieties of it. And then next thing you know, like I think they ended up getting signed to either Nuclear Blast or Napalm Records or some big, you know, extreme music label.
Yeah, and one of the heavy metal ones like that.
Yeah. And they, you know, with Nature was the guy's name, the singer or the lead vocalist. With him passing, you know, of course, they pretty much just put it to bed. But after that, I like learned about The Who and that sort of thing. And I was like, wow, man, I don't know if I would have, I'm sure I would have heard of The Who, but I wouldn't have been exposed to that kind of music prior to that. And so I feel, I guess, maybe like a almost an obligation to mention the Tenger Calvary folks every time I hear about The Who. I'm like, yeah, you may not have had that, or we may not have been there with that, you know, without Tenger Calvary first. But yeah, that's fascinating. I had no idea that the banjo had its place in Africa. You know anything about that? Yeah. or it's the style of music? I don't know if I've heard of anything from
it. It basically, I can't remember exactly all the details. There's one famous woman who's trying to revive that style of music. And the banjo looked completely different back then.
Sure.
And it's not the, it actually branched off from different instruments similar to it that had that one string that's up on the neck.
Okay.
That little high string there.
Gotcha. I'll do some research and look into that. Yeah. That's pretty neat, though.
Yeah, I actually started learning how to play like three finger style banjo last year.
Yeah, how's that been?
Because I'm progressive right now. I've put it down for a while because I've been focused on the Tegelhopper
and Skaldic works.
That works around. Yeah, I've been busy with that for the past couple of months trying to get promoted.
Yeah. So let's talk about that then. Now that's a good segue into it all. So obviously, you know, a pretty vibrant background in music has led you to producing music and sharing it with the world through, I guess you have YouTube, any other platforms that you use to share your music on early?
Yeah, I have my music is actually on mostly all platforms that you can think of, like Spotify, or as I call it, Swat the Fly. Sometimes. Then I'm also on Deezer.
Nice.
And let's see, I'm on Apple Music, which includes iTunes.
Yep.
And then I have, I think, Amazon Music. And it's on iHeartRadio, and it's supposed to be on Pandora, but I'm still not seeing it on there yet.
They take a while, because I know when I was kicking all this podcast stuff out, like, I don't know if I have people that listen through Pandora. It took a while for me to get, I don't know, like approved or whatever to have my content distributed. Like, I submitted my thing for it, and it took them like a month almost to get back to me. But, so that's cool, man. How often do you release content through like your YouTube? I know you do lessons, kind of teaching.
I had started that series basically as a way to teach people, because I felt that there was lack of instruction in English on YouTube, and that those who have made those videos, or said they were going to make them, only made one video. And it has been either months to a year before they followed up. And I try to release at least once a week mainly on a Thursday.
Okay.
And I usually follow my analytics a little bit so I can see when they're going to be around. So release it. I started playing with premieres. And I was supposed to release it on Thursday last week, and I kind of goofed. I set it for Friday instead of Thursday at 12.
Yeah.
I was like after work, I was like on my way out from work, and I looked at my phone and I'm like, I thought I missed my premiere. And then I looked at it and it still said premiere. And I'm like, what? And then I looked at it and then I looked at it again. I was like, oh.
You gotta be kidding me. Yeah, I've done that before with this stuff. Cause you know, these podcasts, you know, they air the same time on Thursday mornings every week. And in the past, like, you know, you look at a calendar for when you want to premiere it, and you're off a day, or you think a certain date is on a certain date, or, you know, and it's classic, you know, it happens. So at least, you know, well, once a week for like lesson type videos. What about, are you recording, I don't know, an EP or an album or anything right now, or do you have anything?
No, I tend to want to release it one single at a time right now. Mm-hmm. And then once I get enough, I may compile it to a EP.
Yeah.
And then probably to an album. But right now I've been, like I said, I've been in the process of moving right now. So it's kind of difficult for me to stay focused on recording anything.
Yeah. Until you get settled again, for sure.
Yeah. I may do a quick record some of the old videos I made. There's an unnamed song I have that I really like that I kept, but I really have to name it soon. But I'm trying to like revisit those, and my plan is to later on re-release Secret Blood. That song I'm going to record that and release that probably at near Secret Blood.
Oh, very cool!
Again next year.
Yeah,
as a full production release, so very it nice. Sounds a lot, but it'll be like a lot better with more accompaniment and stuff like that.
If you don't mind, like, what's your, I don't know, like writing, composing, and assembling process like? You know, what gets you to the point of writing a song and actually releasing one? Like, what inspires you to do it? What you know, whether it's the naming of the song, the composition of it, like what's your process like?
First of all, I suck at lyrics. I'm not a lyricist whatsoever. Neither can I speak Old Norse fluently. I mean, I can understand it, I can pronounce it, but I can't think of the words.
Sure.
And I can't think of the words in English either. So. It's like my mind's all jarbled in there. So basically my music process is more of like a freestyle music process. It's like using a drum, a shaman drum to meditate with. I will meditate with the Tagahuapa sometimes. Wow. I'll lose myself in this trance until I find something that sounds good or sounds correct or sounds right. And then I'll say, okay, I'm going to hang on to this. Sometimes I have to record it, and I'll be like, sometimes I'll be in my underwear sometimes, and just hit record because I'm just jamming away on it. And those of you won't see on YouTube at all.
No, yeah, I mean, hey, if you want that kind of premium content, you know, you might have to subscribe or something, you know, get a, you know. An OF going for, you know, underwear Talahart tunes or something. I don't know, but
yeah, like a Patreon.
yeah. You know, hey, you want this? You're gonna have to fork it over a little bit, you know. But
yeah, but the thing is, it's like really lethargic to me when I do it. So I get to where I can like again that center, when I find something I like, then I usually name it based on what it sounds like.
Okay.
For instance, Call the Ancestors which is my last big single, or my first big single, and on full production. That came with me creating the melody first. And then I started adding drum, like a drum beat, which is kind of, you're kind of limited when you only have one drum and it's a 10-inch hoop, because it's very high sounding, not a low, deep sound.
Yeah.
So what I did was I played around with it and did a small segment with different drum beats and stuff that all sounded great. And I decided I would, one of these drum beats I could also duplicate and lower it in the DAW. So I did that so it sounded like a lower drum. And it would turn out to be like a 2 minutes, 3 seconds piece. And I was like, well, what does that sound like? You know? And I was like, call the answer just came to my head. But when I wrote Seeker Bloat, it was like right after Ostara. And that was the next holiday coming up. So
yeah,
I was like, well, this is appropriate.
The time frame of it all. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's neat that how, and I was kind of like keying in on what you were saying, how the music can guide you into this trance-like state almost, where you get lost in the rhythm, you get lost in the auditory parts of it, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, drumming is always been a component of shamanic, you know, journeying and trance work, right? But I think music in general has that ability to bring us places that we otherwise wouldn't be, you know. It'll trigger memories of things, or it'll put us in a state of mind that takes us away from our conscious selves, you know.
Yeah.
And being able to play that music, not just listening to it, but being able to be a part of that process, it's kind of like giving you that connection, you know. It's the physical connecting of the trance, or of traveling away from this physical place, you know? And so don't want to assume, but I mean, with your aesthetic and the style of music that you play, you are would you call yourself Norse pagan?
Pretty much. Norse heathen. Heathen. I do venture into the dramatic as well.
Okay.
Take a little, because I have a mixed bloodline, a naturally mixed bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, my ancestry just jumps all over the place every now and then. It went from like, one point it went from being like 10% Scandinavian to 1% Swedish to 5% Norwegian. Mm-hmm. But I do have some Scotch in me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot of us, I think.
And I have some like other Britons and stuff, and some Irish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for like, go ahead.
I'm saying I just get from the Anglo-Saxon roots and stuff as well. So I try to incorporate a lot of different dramatic beliefs.
Yeah, that's what I was going to try to touch on is, you know, so there might be folks listening that are confused when we say, well, Norse, Germanic, like, isn't it all the same thing? It is, but it isn't. There's regional differences, because the Norse are strictly Scandinavian, and the Scandinavian countries like Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Iceland pulled from mainland Germania, which is where the Saxons are from. So you're talking like, you know, Britain, Ireland, Scotland, some of the countries that are what they are today, and originated in the mainland Germanic region and have separated out from there. So that's why, you know, we see, even in certain Slavic countries, you know, we see the Slavic Rus, you know, which are or the Swedish Rus, excuse me, that were the founders, you know. So that's where like your Russian people and all that come from, the Slavic people. But, so that's that's what he's, you know, folks are like, you know, what he's talking about being Germanic and Norse too, like having ancestral ties to different parts of the world. It's not, And so when it comes to like the religious practices or the spirituality, yes, there are some very close similarities to the names of the gods, you know, Woden versus Odin, Donar versus Thor, you know, Tyr versus Tyr, and some of the likes. And then so the practices, I think the traditions maybe made their way further north into Scandinavia. And that's why we, you know, see a lot of those religious practices similar in those respective areas.
Yeah. And I still usually primarily use the Norse names mostly. Mm-hmm. But I do use sometimes interchange even in my prayers and my rituals, personal rituals. I'll call Thor by many names or his many names. Like I call him Don or Thunar.
Yeah.
And then I call Tyr like Tyr sometimes.
Yeah.
And I call Freyr Ing.
Ing. Yeah, I've done the same. We've have a similar. So our, you know, little group here is Hlurridi folk, and Hlurridi is a name for Thor. It's Thunderer, you know. It's I think attested to in one of the sagas or somewhere. I don't remember exactly where, but it's a name that refers to him. And so you know, we are Thor's folk or Thor's people of the it's Hlurridi, I think, is probably most closely translated to or loosely translated to as thundering storm. Like it's definitely connotated to Thor, but the Hlurridi is thundering storm. So people of the thundering storm. But I've used Donar as a name during a specific Anglo-Saxon bade or prayer. So I've used like a fire blessing ritual or land blessing ritual with fire, where the name of Thor is summoned to bless the area, but it's said in Old English. And Old English is a Germanic language, just like Old Norse is. It's Old Germanic proto. They all have roots in Proto Germanic language, so they are cognate in ways. They have similar words for similar things. But I've done
a lot of the words that we use as heathens are mostly Old English as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think I talked about this one particular word. I talked about it on a very recent podcast, and that was the word for of frith. So frith is a word that we see cognate to the English modern English word of friend.
So it's weird. Weird is Old English.
Yes. Yeah. Weird. Old English is weird, but weird is Old English. I know what you mean by W-Y-R-D, like weird. Yeah.
Yeah,
but,
weird.
But it's pronounced like that's weird, you know, like as it is and it's odd.
Well, that's where weird came from, though.
Mm-hmm.
Our modern English for weird came from that. But the Old Norse connective would probably be urd.
Yeah. There's that concept of, and so that's another interesting thing too, is I've used that term weird, and some of the metaphysical things about mainland Germanic heathenry, like Saxon heathenry, I've used and still adopt some of those beliefs, whereas I don't think they are quite so largely recognized in Scandinavia, is that the concept of the web of weird and or the well concept, you know, like there's this understanding of what gets fed into the well is going to feed the future. So, you know, the well of Urd is what it's what contains Orlog or Orle in Old English. Yeah. It's what contains the past actions and the past deeds that build into the here and now. And then what we add here and now becomes for the future, the school, the future, the what should or what shall be. But I think those are, I think that the whole concept of, you know, adding luck to the well, that is mainland Germanic beliefs. That is Saxon heathenry, I think, through and through. I don't know of a tried and true documented source, at least anyway, that suggests that Scandinavians had identical or similar things. I could be wrong. Again, I'm still picking up and learning on a lot of it, but
well, so am I. I'm still young at it.
Yeah. How long have you been heathen? would you say?
Self-proclaimed or practicing?
I would say, when did you first realize, so maybe self-proclaimed, like, when did you first realize that this is kind of who you are, you know, the old gods were what were calling to you, or your ancestors, like, you can talk about that if you want. So I would say,
yeah,
self-proclaimed.
Well, we'll go over the history of that. I started out back in about 2013. So that'll be it was late 2013 about-ish that I started. I was breaking off of Christianity for the second time because I tried it again and I just found it was not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of the things they said was just not connecting because I could not agree with, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, for instance, the church that I was going to, they were saying that if somebody would not convert, that it's best to not associate with
them. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what happens if you're married to that person?
Yeah.
And you don't want to break it off. Like, does that say condone divorce? Which they also condemn?
Oh, so, yeah. So the contradictions.
Yeah, contradictions.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so I started looking into it a little bit more. I came across a lot of, I listened to a lot of music and stuff that contained songs about the deities. Amon Amarth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But that's one thing that got me into it. And then Vikings did get to me for a while. And I do admit that for quite a few, about 1 or 2 years, 1.5, two years, probably, I was Brosa True.
Mm-hmm.
what they consider Brosa True. But yeah. I started realizing, like, wait, Valhalla doesn't sound like the only way to go, you know? And I started looking into it more. I didn't read it much at first. But I did watch some videos and stuff on it, of the mythos. And for some time when I moved back to where I live now, I used to live in Pulaski.
Tennessee?
Yeah.
Oh, I know exactly where that is. Yeah.
That's not much to do up there.
No, there's not much to do unless you're part of the clan. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, but they have good food.
Well, yeah. I mean, hey, it's the South, man. You're hard pressed to find bad food here in the South, you know. But yeah.
Yeah. But there was I have fallen some bad times up there, so I decided to move back. And for a while I was still self-proclaimed, you know. I wore Mjolnir. I did not go to any events or anything. I have a friend of mine, and she invited me to events, but I never did go because I was mostly focused on music again with the heavy metal stuff. I was just too focused on that, trying to either start a band or join a band or get good.
Sure.
And then COVID hit, and then that's when I started looking inward.
Gotcha.
That's
wild, man, just to pause for a second and think about how something that is so earth-shattering and so life-changing for everybody, like, there's not literally a person on this planet that hasn't been affected some way or form or fashion by COVID.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that was, for you at least, a thing that kind of caused you to shift your focus into something that has, I'm going to let you finish your story, but I did just want to say, lead you in a different direction or move you in a direction that is better for yourself. Yeah. So,
and yeah, that's when I started reading the Poetic Edda and some other books. I mean, I got one of these basic books that you get like at Barnes and Noble.
Mm-hmm.
And I started reading that for a while. And then I ordered a copy of the Edda, started reading that. I'm still working on, I've been working on this for about a year and a half. The second volume of Our Troth.
Okay.
One thing I always say to myself, I am a terrible pagan, but I'm a damn good heathen. Sorry about the language.
Yeah, some people use those terms interchangeably, but you know, not all heathens, not all pagans are heathens, but all heathens are pagans.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I say this is because I can't stay focused on my reading so much and stuff, and I'm always distracted by like social media and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Like, and I do need, and I do get out every now and then, but I don't get out enough. And but when I do, I feel rejuvenated. Which that's what another reason why it made sense, because I always like used to hike a lot, and I realized I can go for hours in the woods. But if I'm outside, if I'm out like cutting grass in a field, I'm just dogging. Like, yeah, it's just like so hot, and like my energy's like low.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I like trees. I like trees, and I like small bodies of water.
Mm-hmm.
Like rivers and rivers, lakes, and streams.
Same.
But not very big on the ocean.
I mean, that's where I grew up from. Like, so I'm from, you know, the Northeast. I'm from New York, and I literally grew up near very large bodies of salt water. I mean, I was an hour away from the Atlantic Ocean. I was 10 minutes from the Long Island Sound, which is it's the body of water that separates the North Shore to Connecticut. So, but it's salt water, and it, you know, it's tidal, and it has, you know, all of the things of the salt of the sea, you know, so there's that, I think, deep down connection for me. But I grew up in the woods, man. I grew up, whenever I wanted to play or do anything, it was, you know, I didn't care about the video games. I didn't want to go watch movies. I wanted to be out in nature, man. I wanted to climb trees. I wanted to, you know, walk through the swamps and stuff. So you know, the hardwoods, the upstate and the forest, you know, the streams, the rivers, that sort of thing. That's where I feel the most like at home when I'm in nature is there. I always have this like,
but go ahead.
I say, I always have this like maybe yearning perhaps for the sea, you know, just cause I think it's close to me in my heart from where I was born and raised, but it's not nearly as, not nearly as prominent for me as just being out amongst the trees and in the river and that sort of thing.
I mean, I'm always called to the mountains myself.
Mm.
But the thing is, I do find myself enjoying a good ocean walk or something like that around the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
As long as it's not like a deserted beach-like area where there's a bunch of people.
Yeah, yeah. Where you have, it's just like, you in the sea kind of deal.
Like cliffs or something like that. Like seaside cliffs or even like... When it's like crystal, when the ocean's like crystal, like in the Caribbean.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
But like you go down here to go shores, I'm like, meh. or Florida.
Panama City Beach. Like I've been there so many times and that's pretty nice because it's the Gulf Coast. But yeah, you know, there's certain areas that just speak better to you or speak more to you. So yeah, I mean, self-proclaimed heathen for almost a decade now, you'd say, because I mean you're talking, you know, late 2013, we're gonna be in 2023 soon, so you know you've been you've been dabbling at least a bit for the biggest part of a decade. And how much has your music helped with the whole progress in your paganism or your heathenry, whatever label you want to put to it, as like how much has that been a part of your path? Because you know, I look at some of the examples of Skaldic poetry is a big thing in Norse and Germanic culture. They were the storytellers. Mm-hmm. They were the ones that presented things to kings and the royal courts. And they had a very, very prominent place in society. Has that been a part of your like practices? Like feel like there's any ties to, I don't know, maybe Bragi or some of the other like Skaldic type gods or
Bragi is one of my ones I kind of look to. I don't offer to him as much, but I do. He flows through me whenever I play. The only thing is sometimes I think my music is also kind of a distraction from my heathenry practice. Like sometimes, like I feel like I have to practice more than I have to read. Yeah.
Practice meaning, but, like practice music or practice as a heathen,
Practice music and then over reading something.
Yeah. But well, I want to key in on that though, because you know you're doing it. It's the living part of your beliefs. You could sit and read, you know, all 700 and some odd different Icelandic sagas, and you could read the Heiland, and you could read all these different texts and become book smart. But how are you living it? How are you? Because heathenry is a living religion. This is a living folkway.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would argue.
That's the reason why I said, I was a good heathen, though.
But I, yeah, exactly.
I understand the social constructs of the heathen. Of the heathen constructs that they used, like the whole idea of tribe and kindred and kin.
Yeah, that's funny because
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
I get asked a lot of times, well, maybe not a lot, but I got asked recently by a very close friend of mine. He's like, so you've read any good books lately? And I was like, no, I don't really read a lot. I'm too busy doing stuff, you know? And I felt bad in a way, cause I'm like, wow, you know, this guy's pretty into reading, you know what I mean? Like, and he's always looking for, you know, really interesting reading materials and stuff. And I was like, I got nothing for you, man. Not at least not right now. Cause I'm not, that's not where my head is. That's not where my focus is. I'm not too much interested in getting stuck in a book. Not that there's anything against it, I think it's great, but that's not where I was at. So I was like, I really got nothing to offer you, man. I'm sorry. But now if you're looking to, you know, talk about what it's like, you know, walking in a river for 3/4 of a mile, then I'm your guy. You know,
or or understanding the construct of the heathen booze and stuff, you know.
Yeah. And but you know, I think there might be value to a healthy mix of all. Like, I mean, there's definitely a place for taking time to study and learn. I mean, I think there's not enough of that to go around for a lot of us. And then, you know, there's some people that's all that they do. That's all that, and they are so smart and they're so giving of their knowledge. You know, there's a lot of content creators that do that. And I'm like, man, you know, if that's like a full-time job just to be in the academia parts of it all, you know, like you are a walking encyclopedia of Northern culture and archaeological findings and languages and such. Like, that's almost a full-time job if you want to make it such.
Yeah.
I don't have time for that, you know.
Some do.
Yeah. Well, more power to them, man. That's great. And then they're, you know, the ones that want to share it, then for folks like us that don't have the interest or the desire to get, you know, buried in a book, we can go to those guys.
Yeah.
And you can play your music and I can, you know, go wade in a river for hours or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, man. Go ahead. That's good stuff.
Yeah. It's crazy where like they are our paths lead. Yeah.
Definitely. And I'm sure you're probably, I think all of us have a similar story in that, you know, the heathen or the pagan, you know, whatever, the person that we are today is not the same person that we were yesterday. It's not the same person that we were last year. It's not the same person that we were. I don't practice the way that I do. I don't live as a heathen the way I do, the same way as I did even last year or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Or whatever, right? Like I've evolved and I've grown so much and I'm growing and evolving every day. And it's really, I think a lot of us have a similar story to tell, you know, like you were saying, starting things off where you ended up at a point where you were pretty brosatru. I've never talked to anybody that openly admitted to that, you know? And so that's like, oh, that's reality, man. Like that's refreshing. And to have that honesty.
I mean,
is noble,
I carry that shame with me everywhere I go, and I use it as a laughing point. Yeah, it's like a joke.
Hey, yeah. You know, I mean,
like, I mean, I slip and fall down and laugh about it.
Well, you almost
One time we were, I was at work one time, you know, and we were egging this one person on because he backed into a pole with a forklift. And here I am just talking about making pole jokes, you know, and then I collide with that same pole. I'm just sitting there laughing because I like, look, and then I'm making pole jokes about me, you know?
Yeah. You got put in check there for a minute, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you end up laughing about it, you know? I mean, it could have been worse.
You got to learn from your mistakes. I think it's, you know, the mistake is only bad if you don't learn from it. And however big or small you want to consider, right? Obviously, I think the whole, Bros of Truth thing is largely due to pop media and pop culture and things that just really strike certain people's fancy and nerve. You know, they're like, I'm a descendant of Ragnar and descendant of Rollo. Yeah. You and like literally 90% of Scandinavia or whatever. Like you're nothing special, buddy. Like, I mean, get over yourself.
If that gets you through the door, though, that gets you through the door.
But exactly to that point, right? Like that was a gateway for you. It was something that led you to where you are now. And it's not the end point, but it was a point. And the B point being is that you use that as a means to figure things out for yourself and to actually find where the living heathenry resides. Yeah. It's not necessarily in the stories 100%. It's not in the mantras. It's not in, you know, it's in living it. It's in doing it. It's in being about it. And to whatever end that might be, for some, it might be very shamanic. For some, it may be animistic. For some, it might be music. For others, it might be crafts, you know, craftsmen and women, that people that weave, people that sew, people that carve, people that, you know,
work with their hands. I envy those people.
You know what I mean? Like it's, our heathen communities are so diverse and encompass so many different walks of life. That's, I think, one of the beautiful things about, you know, just paganism, but heathenry as a whole. Like there are so many things going on that fit so many different, like you don't have to be the warrior, you know, you don't have to be a badass. You can be the weaver. You can be the musician. You can be a quiet herbalist. You can sit at home and just, you know, garden and be a good heathen. You know what I mean? Like there's no dogma. There's no, like you don't have to be a rune reader. Yeah. You don't have to do any of those things. It's whatever you're inspired and called to do. And then how you live it, how you live it sincerely.
Yeah.
And that's one of the, I think, that, you know, just the most refreshing things. You know, you're sitting here talking about the decade or so that you've been a heathen, and then how much of that time has been spent around music and expressing your heathenry through song or through music.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, you know?
But I can admit that I still am into, like, some Bros of Truth type things. Like, I do enjoy historical combat, like HEMA.
Oh yeah, I mean
it's a science.
It's a martial art.
It's a martial art. At one point, before I was into the Viking thing, I was mostly into samurai stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like the katanas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then
I
started getting more into like European martial arts and stuff, and realized that this is just as good. You know, I was always, I used to be the katana is better than the
the long medieval
sword. Yeah. Like, no, they all had their own attributes.
Yeah. They were crafted for certain purposes to be used in a certain way. And they, you know, in the right hands. Region. Yeah. Culturally, regionally. I mean, and in the right hands, they're all equally deadly.
Yeah.
In the right trained hands, they're all equally deadly. So I don't think it's a matter of, you know, which one's better than the other. It's which one was, you know, because you got to look at that too. Like the katana was designed as a slash and stuff type weapon because of the armor that was used at the time. Like,
yeah,
you could slice open things with the katana. And then, you know, you look at the heavy and weighty European broadswords or long swords. Like those things were meant to not necessarily slash as they much were meant to pierce and to crush. Like you had to,
they weren't actually that weighty, actually. They're actually very light balanced.
Yeah, true. You're right.
You could change direction easily.
Yeah, you're right.
But they were more flexible as well. So if they glanced off of you, that's the other thing is katana's a little bit more brittle when it came to full force bluntness.
Well, yeah.
You
know, bamboo versus steel, you know, or the type of armor that they had to cut through, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
Different style, different sort of thing.
Yeah.
But,
and also the steel was passed down because it was so rare in that country.
Yeah, that's true too.
And it's interesting though. The interesting part about a katana though is it's held in by one pin.
You're talking about the tang, how it's like.
Yeah, constructed. The tang is held. That it's held in to its handle, to the hilt by one pin. It's made of bamboo.
I'll tell you what, man. Bamboo is some of the lightest and most durable material. Like, I mean, literally homes are built out of this stuff. And it's incredible how lightweight, but how strong it is, you know?
Yeah.
So that doesn't surprise
me. They were using steel for at one point for that pin, but they changed the bamboo because the blade would wiggle and warp that pin. So they would just use bamboo so they could just easily snap it and replace it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's readily sourced because it's indigenous to the land. So, you know, that
they can make their own.
Right.
The samurai made their own.
Yep. That's fascinating.
I learned that actually a couple of days ago.
Oh, I just learned it now because I didn't realize that it was, I didn't realize that either. So I learned another thing today.
Yeah. I'm always learning. I like learning.
You got to, man. You can't stay, whether it's a book or whether it's through life practices, you know, I mean, if you haven't learned something new today and then don't learn something new tomorrow, then you've wasted a day. Yeah. Always look to learn something new is, I think, a good, whether it's a word or a historical fact or how to do something, learn a new skill, learn a new word, learn something new, man. Like,
open new trade.
Broaden your knowledge to be of better service to the community around you, to the people around you, because you never know when that knowledge could get put to use and you could help, you know, people near to you and dear to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like last year, I think it was either last year or the year before. It may have been last year where I started learning how to brew. And I've only made four batches. But,
of mead?
Yeah.
Mead? Yeah.
Mead.
That's a fun process.
Yeah. It's the thing is I know my ratios now. Because
that's the key part.
My second batch conked out like at 7.86%. It's like when it quit and I'm like, okay, this can be really sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, those low ABV volumes tend to be a bit more lockjaw sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, I used 1 pound too much in the third batch as well. I was using a 3-to-1 and I was making it in big batches, like 5 gallons. And I went 16 pounds for the 5 gallons of 15.
Whoa.
I think it would be a little bit sweeter, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Nope, the one conked out, the other one went to 12.
Live and learn, right? It's alchemy, it's chemistry. You got to figure out that sweet spot, you know? And you learn a skill, you learn something out of it all. You know what the ratios are, what the right proportions are. And then once you figure that part out, you're off to the races. You're good to go.
Yeah. I've kind of slowed down on that because of my music and my
work
and stuff.
Yeah, you have too much going on. It, you know, get a bit overwhelming. But so for the for the folks that want to keep up with your Scaldic Works thing, because that seems like a really focused effort on your part, of course.
Yeah.
Is there like, I mean, we're gonna put the YouTube channel link in the description and in the show notes of the podcast. We're gonna put as much as we can. Do you have like a, I don't know, like a link tree or anything that everybody can go to and then find all your stuff there?
Yeah, I have a link tree now.
Sweet.
I'll send that to you, or you can copy it from my, it's in my, underneath my videos now.
Okay, great. Yeah. So anybody that watches your videos knows that it's there, but we'll definitely annotate that in the show notes and in the description of this podcast. So that way people that want to know more about your music and maybe learn, right? Maybe they want to pick up the instrument themselves and they can learn from watching your videos. There you go.
Yeah. And I also now have created merch.
Oh, okay. Good. Merchandise. That's, I love merchandise, you know? So
Yeah, I'm going through Teespring, or it's now Spring, I think, now.
Yep, that's where I do my merch too, man.
Yeah.
Very cool.
The thing was, my problem was for a while to figure out how to get my logo on there without creating a background.
Yeah.
Like, make it transparent and stuff. I have a friend that's actually an old colleague from my old job.
Yeah.
And he finally figured out how to get my black logo to version 2.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, well, can we make a white one and a red one, please?
Nice. That's always good to have those hookups.
Yeah. The reason why I want to do a red one, though, is if I do it like on gray, it will look like the old runestones.
Very cool. Very cool. You have merchandise, so people can definitely support you in that way. And as I said, it is a great way to support, because not only are you getting, you know, monetary kickback from the sale of your merchandise, but people are advertising your brand, you know, so people are like, oh, that's cool, where'd I get that? And then they can, you know, it points you back to that whole thing. So
I created it this week. I actually created that stuff this weekend, so I'm waiting until my next paycheck to order me a sample.
Oh yeah, I've done that before too, and I actually have some stuff on my own store that I'm like, I want to order me something like that. I want to be able to wear it too.
Yeah,
I'm terrible about advertising my own brand, but that's a job in and of itself. You get it.
But spring hoodies are so soft, though.
They are, man. They're great quality. So I mean, here we are, right? I mean, not a sponsor, but you know, spring.com, and like, if you're gonna look to make your own merchandise or for anything, I've gotten tons of good reviews on the quality of the hoodies and the t-shirts. I own one of my own t-shirts as well, and it's good quality. It's well made.
Yeah,
the logo looks great.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so, but once I get the white, like the white or red logos, I can start doing darker colors.
Well, looking forward to that.
It's also in the link tree as well. I've added that.
Perfect. Well, then we're gonna put the link tree link definitely in the show notes and description, so that way everybody that's listening and watching to this right now will have the opportunity to go check them out. And guys, please support content creators in general, but support the Heathen content creators. Go ahead and subscribe to Blake's channel, Skaldic Works. Follow him on any of the social medias that you find in his link tree. Buy his music if it's available. Purchase it, you know, stream it, do whatever. Do all the things. Help is you know, subscribing and following doesn't cost you anything. But if you're looking to help, you know, a hardworking individual out that's doing a lot of this stuff out of the labor of their own heart and the love behind it, consider offering your money as well. It definitely helps. But Blake, I'm going to wrap this up. If you have anything else that you want to add before we send the people on their way, you hang out for just a minute so I can properly bid you farewell. But anything else that you want to say before?
Not much, actually. It's pretty much said what's said.
Yeah. All right, then. I appreciate your time, my man. Thank you for being a part of this. And for all of you that are listening and you know, streaming, watching, whatever today, thank you for your support. Don't forget to check the description, show notes for all the ways that you can support this podcast and Midgard Musings as a whole. Check out Blake's work and Skaldic Works and all the ways that you can support him. And until we talk again, may the gods continue to notice you. And may your ancestors smile upon you. Thanks for watching.